Back in 1940, eight sensational heroes united to create the world's very first superhero team, the Justice Society of America. Now, 85 years later, we're gathering podcasters and bloggers from around the globe for a month-long celebration in an event we're calling JS April. Throughout April 2025, join dozens of content creators as they each share their own unique tributes to the original and greatest superhero team, including all-star podcasters and bloggers like
Justice Society presents
the Lombox Crusade Podcast,
Campus Comics Cast,
Supergirl Comic Box Commentary,
The Quarter Bin Podcast,
The Bat Pod,
The Earth 2 Podcast,
FW Team Up,
Diana Prince is the New Wonder Woman,
Fanholes Podcast,
Back to the Bins,
Coffee and Comics,
The Huntress Podcast,
*51.blogspot.com,
Justice Society Origins, a part of John Reed's Comics,
DC Special Cast,
Between the Pages Blog,
The Outcasters, a Batman and the Outsiders podcast,
A World on Fire, an All-Star Squadron podcast,
JLA Stories and Friends,
The Monitor Tapes,
a Crisis on Infinite Earths podcast,
Lords of Order, a DC's Dr. Fate fan podcast,
David M. Gallagher at Medium.com,
JSA in the 90s,
Justice League Legacies,
DC Secret Files podcast,
Mike's Geek World,
Pop Culture Affidavit,
The Source Material Comics Podcast,
That Giffen Show,
Worst Collection Ever,
The Fantastic Four,
It All Comes Back to Superman.
And that's just some of the podcasters and bloggers who'll be joining in the celebration. Get ready for a thrilling month of beloved characters, fascinating insights, and incredible stories. Follow the action on social media with the hashtag JSApril, and visit our website for a complete list of participating podcasters, bloggers, and what they're each covering at fireandwaterpodcast.com/JSApril.
Bill, you ready to record?
Yeah. What are we doing this time?
It's Avengers 46 in the Kang Imperative.
Again?
Yeah. Yeah, somehow, I don't know, somehow the original recording got deleted. So we got to go on, and I need for you to pretend like you care and pretend like you're enthusiastic.
So this is like The Rise of Skywalker. Somehow we're going to record again.
Yeah, exactly.
Got it. That's my motivation.
I always think of the Brady Bunch when they were in a commercial for the some sort of detergent or something, and they had like an actress advising them, "Well, what's your motivation?" and they were like totally overacting because of it. And Paul Winchell, I think, was the director, and he was like, "That's it, we're out of here. We can't take this anymore," because they were overacting. But anyway.
Avengers Spotlight!
Welcome to Avengers Spotlight on Back to the Bins. I'm Paul Spataro, and once again, that is Dr. Bill Robinson with us looking at Avengers number 46.
And I'm Captain Enthusiasm.
Woohoo!
I had to buy a new car.
And I got to buy a new roof, so we're both out a lot of money.
You know what? We're both going to spend about the same amount of money. I didn't buy new, but it's new to me.
We're probably out about the same amount of money, but you get to drive around in a new car. I get to sit in the same house underneath the roof.
I get to drive in a Jeep now.
Eugene the Jeep. You should name it Eugene.
Ah, yes. We were trying to come up with a name for the Jeep. I could just go Jeep, 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 yeah. Jeep.
That works for me.
Do you now, have... apparently I have to buy a bunch of ducks and put them in the window.
You know what you, you know what you need? You need a USB charger.
For?
So that when I'm there, I can come home with it.
Oh. Yes, yes, that's often what you do.
So for anybody listening, it's got to be at least 2 years ago, right?
Something like that, yeah.
I was in town and Dr. Bill was driving me around, and I had gotten into the habit of bringing my USB charger out with me so that I could keep my phone charged because the battery was wearing out. So I was charging my phone in the car, and when he dropped me off, I took the charger without realizing I had not walked out with my charger that day. Instead, I had taken Sarah's charger, Bill's daughter's charger, and was unaware of it until I was back in Long Island.
She's like, "Where's my charger?" I'm like, "Oh no!" And then, so you shipped one to us.
Yes, but I screwed that up too.
Yes, because then we got an order. What did we get an order of? Swiffer pads or something?
Some sort of cleaner.
There was some cleaner. They're like. And we're all like, "Did you order this?" No.
Because
I didn't order it.
Because when I had sent the chargers to Sarah to make up for the one I unintentionally stole, it changed the shipping address on my Amazon account to her. So when I made another order, it just automatically went to her.
Yeah.
But thankfully, my good friend Ben Robinson brought it back to return it for me, so that yes. I got a refund on that one.
So. Oh, and one other thing that I told Paul about earlier was the as I was cleaning out the old car, I found a bunch of golf balls, and I looked at one of them. I'm like, Slazenger, wasn't that in Goldfinger?
When you texted me. I felt – see, the problem is I couldn't text back what I wanted to do. I wanted to go, which is what Oddjob did when he supposedly found the ball. But I couldn't text you that.
Ah. So Goldfinger used a Schlesinger –
Schlesinger 1?
I looked at it. One of them used a 1 and one of them used a 7, and I have a Schlesinger 4. So I'm splitting the difference between the two, which I just thought that was so funny. Okay, yeah, Goldfinger used a Schlesinger 7, Bond used a 7. No, Goldfinger used a 1 and Bond used a 7. And, like, my golfing days, God, I haven't golfed in, like, 15, maybe 10 years.
My last golf outing was 1993.
Yeah, I didn't do it regularly. It was, you know... go out on a Saturday morning and get drunk. And then there was that time that I told Ben to hang on, and he didn't. And I did a quick 180 on the golf course, and he flew out of the golf cart. And then after I complete the turn, I look back, and he's not there. And then I stop, but I look back, and I was the first one on the track. I think I've told this story before. I was the first one on the greens. So you could see where I had driven through the dew, made my U-turn, and then there's a boy-shaped sliding mark like 5 feet from the arc of the wheels. And I'm like, I said hold on. Not, are you okay? When I say hold on, you hold on.
I started playing golf around 1986 or so, and I really liked it, and I played fairly regularly, not really regular, but once every 2 or 3 weeks. You know, I mean, I played fairly regularly until 94. And then at that point, I had decided it was too much money, the game took too much of my time, and I didn't go frequently enough to really improve my game. So I just kind of quit cold turkey. And yeah. It was a funny thing, though, because when I was going, I really enjoyed it. And I enjoyed it to the point where I would, like, watch golf on TV to see how these guys were doing their things. I was watching, like, instructional videos. And then as soon as I stopped, it was like I had no interest in any of that anymore. It was just done. For me, it was like when you watch one of these reality TV show things. Like, if you watch them, you hate to miss an episode. You want to see everything. You know, you start to know who the people are. You want to see what happens. But if you don't watch them, you just kind of shrug your shoulders and think, eh, who cares? At least that's been my experience. So that was my experience with golf as well. As soon as I stopped, it was like, who cares?
Well, my experience before that was much like I treated it like Michael Douglas in Falling Down. You seen that video? That movie?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I could see you doing that.
That's what I felt about it. Yeah, you know what? It's funny. One of my best friends said that. He's like, Bill, I see you. This is you in like 20 years. I'm like, thanks.
He probably said that to you almost 20 years ago.
Yeah. Uh-oh.
So if you can't tell, having already done our review of issue number 46, we're procrastinating.
Okay, all right. The cover. We don't like the cover.
Yeah,
we didn't
like
the cover last time, and you know what? Time has not changed my opinion.
I feel guilty about not liking the cover because clearly it's one of these painted, heavy computer work covers. And I feel like it probably took the artist, who I don't recall, a good deal of time and effort to come up with this image. And it's just not all that appealing to me. In particular, it looks to me like Captain America has a little swordsman mustache.
Miss Marvel Warbird, whatever, she's got a weird face on her. And something I didn't notice last time is Wanda's a little too beefy.
Yeah, she's putting a what do they call 3 pounds of bologna in a 2 pound bag.
She's been hit the mutant growth hormone or something there. She's looking a little buff.
She also looks like she's gonna pop out of that bustier part of it. And the way it's drawn, you know, and I don't mean this in a sexist kind of way, but it almost looks like she was drawn nude, and then the outfit is added on to it.
The cover artist is Ariel Olivetti.
Olivetti. Yeah, I've heard of him. I'm not really very familiar with him, but I've heard of him.
And then it's got the weird fire stuff in the background, and it's like a cut and paste with it looks like a color forms.
Yeah. Yeah, well, there's a thin line around each of the characters
separating
it from the background. So I'm assuming those two things were done
separately. Yeah, just the background, not from each other. Like, wherever they touch, they don't have that white line, but it's just... And this one did not have a corner box. And then we realized when we did the next episode...
Oh, no, it's the past. We're not up to this episode yet.
Oh, yeah. Let me see. I'll look at my book here. Oh, yeah, next time this cover is in the corner of the next issue.
Oh.
Look at that. Yeah, wow. How about that?
And it's, you know, the people, baseball fans who are older will remember Harry Carey going, how about that? Or Mel Allen.
Was it
Mel Allen, my mistake.
Yeah. How about that?
He was a Yankees announcer, I think, in the 60s, and then he used to do This Week in Baseball.
Yes, that's where I know that from. And then was it Phil Rizzuto? Was he the Yankees?
Yes.
I just saw him doing a commercial. Phil Rizzuto for the Money Store.
You didn't just see it. Phil Rizzuto has been dead for a number of years, and I don't think the Money Store still exists. So if you saw it, it was a retro commercial.
No, I saw him on TV. When I was a kid, I think.
Oh, yes. When you were a kid, yes. I thought you said you just saw.
Oh, well, no. Maybe. Well, hey, it's all new to me.
You want to give the pre-canned synopsis on this one?
Sure. I will. Well, this one has the flashbacks, but I'll do the synopsis. We'll discuss the flashbacks when we go through. Wait. All right, credits. Kurt Busiek, writer. Manuel Garcia, pencils. Bob Layton, inks. Tom Smith, colors. Richard Starkings and Comcrafts. Albert DeShenzhe, letters. We already said Ariel Olivetti for the
Cover art, Mark Sumerak. I am Sumerak. See, assistant editor. And Tom Brevoort is the editor. Kang's legions attack France. Battling troops, Le Peregrine, Micromax, and Avengers, Firebird, Hercules, She-Hulk, and Thor. Meanwhile, the Master's walls encircle North America's major cities, including Boston, where Black Knight analyzes the repairs as quickly as Wonder Man smashes it. Boston's wall artillery destroys Kang's flying spy device despite its force field. After Black Knight traces the wall's controls back to the Master's base, Wasp sends Silverclaw, Quicksilver, Warbird, and Yellowjacket to seize the Master's tech for use against Kang. Stingray has already penetrated the base after tracking one of the many abducted governmental officials, whom the Master intends to become mentally enslaved puppet rulers. Planning to protect enough of Earth to preserve his power base while allowing Kang to destroy the rest as a means of depopulation. While Stingray relays this to the Avengers, Warbird's espionage squad invades the base, but the Master detects them and blows up the section they have entered. Kaboom. In Texas, Triathlon helps Vision infiltrate the Triune Understanding, who have detected the Triple Evil's arrival in Damocles' base. Doing a lot of commas here. Kang warns Scarlet Centurion not to let his romantic infatuation with Warbird distract him. And in Washington, D.C., Captain America, no longer wearing bandages over his uniform, Jack of Hearts, Photon, and Scarlet Witch prepare to direct assault on Damocles' base. Oh, and there was also cover erroneously lists total volume number as 463. It is actually 461. It was a typo.
Ooh. So, having re-disposed of the synopsis, we already talked about the cover. Not crazy about it. You know, just looking at it, of the characters on there, I think the best rendered would be the Vision.
Followed by Thor.
Yeah, not all that closely. I think to me it's not even close. I think the Vision is the best one, and I'm not even totally thrilled with him. I don't like the way the characters look.
Bulky and masculine. He was just like svelte.
He's a little too buff.
Chunky.
Not all, but Captain America looks not overly buff, and Ms. Marvel or whatever name she was going by at the time, Warbird. Yeah. She doesn't look overly buff, but all three of the others do.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Thor is supposed to be buff, but it looks...
Even his arms look a little too big.
Yeah, like they couldn't even be attached to that body. They're so big.
Yeah.
So, moving into the story, we get a splash page that Manuel Garcia... It looks like a very Sal Buscema...
With the open mouth, with the spittle?
Yeah. I guess that's Kang's troops coming up on the reader. Yeah, they are the shock troops of Kang the Conqueror, 50,000 strong, as if with one voice they roar, and with one mind they charge. And they just look like you're generic bad guys.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, the battle is joined. And I found it interesting with, you know, that we have Le Peregrine and Micromax, who are the only two that I don't really know. Micromax is apparently a size changer, and Le Peregrine is a flying, which I think Le Peregrine is French for Falcon.
I don't know if it's for Falcon, but I...
Well, it's definitely some sort of Falcon-like
bird of powers. Prey.
And then, you know, even in the battle, like looking at Thor, you know, and he's kind of in the forefront of the page there. It looks like there's no kinetic energy to him swinging that hammer.
Bonk.
Yeah, he's like bonking he's somebody in the head. Yeah, but it doesn't look like his body doesn't look like it's in mid-swing.
scooping up the field Kangs and bopping them in the head. Down came. Sorry.
I feel like the art in this run has kind of dropped off significantly, because I think in the beginning we were very enamored with it.
Yeah. Yeah.
So then we get, it's interesting to see the Master's, basically the fortress that he's created with all of this wall, because it's partially over land and partially over water, which seems to be an interesting choice. And as you know, as they test it, the defenses shoot down whatever's coming at them.
Yeah, Kang stuff. Oddly enough, they're. I just realized that they don't seem to shoot down the Avengers or the United States planes that are flying around. Probably because it knows there's no threat.
Yeah, I guess at this point they're not being treated as a threat. So, and then, you know, Wasp, I guess, is the lady in the chair for this one. And she's monitoring everything that's going on while Jarvis is bringing her tea. In this day and age, does it make sense that Jarvis would wear kind of the butler outfit? I don't even know.
Sense that even when they're off duty, they often wear their outfits?
Yeah, well, I guess Jarvis's butler outfit is his version of his superhero uniform.
Well, you know, he has to have maintained the, when people come to the mansion.
Which is, his butler uniform is, you know, tails.
Yes.
Anyway, so we cut to is it a flashback with the Plotic taking the mayor of someplace?
Well, that's kind of she's recounting that we've been getting reports all day. The same scene repeating itself, dozens of governors and mayors. So basically we're seeing it happen once, but it's been happening all over.
But in this Stingray is there. Which, again, I've mentioned before, Stingray just has one of the best costumes, which we don't really get to see too much of here. We get a little bit. We get one nice panel of it. But he follows the amphibious Plotic, you know, to try and get back to the Master of the World.
Vincent Price?
No, he was the last man on Earth.
No, he was also the Master of the World.
Okay, I didn't know that.
You didn't see that one? You didn't see that movie? I believe it has Charles Bronson in it too.
I may have to check.
That's
that
where he's got the flying. He's got the flying ship.
Not next
door. Like the ship with the helicopter blades, and he's, you know. Oh man, you haven't seen that?
No.
Oh yeah, yeah, that's a good one.
All right, I'll keep that one in mind. So he follows, and then we cut back to Carol Danvers, Warbird, and she's joining, who is it, Quicksilver, Yellow Jacket, and Silver Claw.
Silver Claw, yeah.
And this is another place where the artwork seems to take a negative turn for me. I don't like the derp face on Yellow Jacket. Down at the bottom panel, there's a shot of Captain America on the screen talking to the Wasp. It looks bad to me.
Is he awake?
Yeah.
He's sleeping.
I guess he's recovering from that concussion.
The head. I'm fine. Bye, Jen.
Just passing by.
A whole lot of lumps.
So, he's there with, and again, I don't remember if this was in another episode or if it was in the Lost episode, but I'm a little surprised by Tony Stark just acting as a scientist, a tech guy, yeah. And I think at one point Jan said something like he was more important to them as a tech guy than as Iron Man, but you would think he would somehow manage to do both.
Yeah, I mean, but are we peppering our expectations of Tony Stark with the movie version that can just like whip shit up right out of his ass on the spot with like nanorobots and stuff? and that he's more effective in the field. Whereas this Tony Stark back at this time, pre all the movies and everything, was a more – he wasn't Robert Downey Jr. for one thing, which what they turned him into, even in the comics.
Yeah.
But he was more of a tech guy, and he might do better than just being a – I mean, they've got a lot of firepower on the field. And with the different Avengers teams they have, and I think this, and I don't know if we said this the last time, I think it's not a bad choice.
See, when they came out with the Iron Man movie in 2008, which is still sometime about 7 years after this book,
yeah,
there was a lot of talk of, well, why would you make Iron Man your character? He's like a C-list hero.
Yeah.
And even when they said that then, I never really saw him as a C-list guy. I always thought he was, you know, he wasn't, you know, the main guy. That was Spider-Man. He wasn't the Marvel's First Family. That was the Fantastic Four. But he was still among the core heroes as far as I was concerned. He was, you know, one of the main Avengers. And I you know, like, I didn't see him as a C-list guy.
No, I remember, like, Iron Man. Why would you come out with an Iron Man movie? Yeah. I've been reading Iron Man. Of course, that's just me. I've been reading Iron Man since I was a kid. You know, so I didn't feel he was a C-list character.
Yeah, no, me neither. And I was always kind of thrown off by that a little bit. And I feel like this almost has that element to it, where it's like, yeah, we don't really need him as Iron Man. He's not that pivotal to the series, which I always thought he was. But, you know, to each their own, I guess. Meanwhile, we cut to the to Texas, where we have the base of the Triune Understanding, and here this threw me off a little bit, because I thought there was going to be kind of an effort to fool them into, like, to be undercover.
Yeah, and it's just like, oh well, you're here to see what we're doing.
Yeah, exactly. Which I guess is the better way to do it, but. You know, I mean, but, you know, whatever. It just surprised me. So, you know, they're looking into what's going on there, because the Avengers don't totally trust what's going on. And what's the name of the main guy?
Jonathan Tremont.
Yeah, and so, you know, he's meeting with them, and then they get the word of the great threat. The triple evil is coming. Sensitives have registered its arrival in the solar system. It will reach Earth in days. So, meanwhile, the Wasp is still looking over what's going on as...
The trouble alert is going off.
Yes. And Stingray is coming into the base of the Master, where he has... the governors of various locations in tubes. Do you,
yeah.
when at down at the bottom of that page, do you see anybody who you think, oh, that's who they're trying to make it look like?
Well, this would be 2001. The first guy in the closest tube could be a redheaded Danny Kaye. The next one could be George Bush.
See, I was thinking that second one could be Clint Eastwood.
Maybe. And then you got Lex Luthor. And maybe that's George W. Bush in the last one. I don't know. Why? Well, who did you think they were trying to go for?
Like I said, the second tube from the right, I thought it looked like it could be Clint Eastwood. The second from the left, I could see that being George H.W. No, George W. H.W. is the senior.
But they didn't kidnap any presidents. What's weird is they did mayors and governors.
Yeah.
I mean...
Who am I, Governor Darfest? It's quite simple. I am your master. Then we go to a... No, that's what he says.
Oh, I thought you were quoting a movie.
That's what he says on that page. And then we have a retelling of his origin.
Back in Alpha Flight. I don't like that they don't put this. Well, I guess technically this is not a flashback it's a flashback to another comic, but it's in that comic book, it was also a flashback. So I guess you don't have to, you know what I'm saying? It's, we're getting like in Inception level here, because this was already shown in one of the earlier issues of Alpha Flight. So I guess we really don't need to reference the early issue of Alpha Flight, because he's just telling the story again.
When he's being rebuilt, it doesn't that almost look like Wolverine and Weapon X?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, he was broken down and put back together, and it, kind of a, I think we said before, kind of Vandal Savage-like.
Yeah.
But different? I'm trying to recall Vandal Savage. I mean, it, Vandal Savage's was like this as well, but was it there
similar,
more of a,
very, very similar thing? Origin.
Was it a more a mysticism thing, or am I getting that confused?
I don't, I'm not well enough versed on it to say definitively, but I thought it was more like a, some sort of mists or something that did it, as opposed to mystical.
Oh, okay.
And then he talks about his plans, which ultimately shows a battle where we have a svelte Hulk.
Oh, God. Yeah, this is the one of the pages with the bad art. Oof.
And then there's Daredevil down on the ground, apparently deceased. I think that's what the DD stands for.
I don't know.
Why you bury Daredevil in cold, cold ground? Do you see anybody else on that in that picture that you recognize?
Well, the more people in the tube?
No, I'm talking about the in the battle scene with the Svelte Hulk.
Oh,
looks like it could be Hercules to the right of the Hulk.
Yeah, Wolverine's there. See him? Where? Behind the guy with the monkey-looking face?
Oh, yeah.
We saw him last time.
Yeah, but I forgot. Now I remember. So the Master is relaying these plans of a war that's going to basically cut down on the number of... It's almost like the Thanos theory of cutting down on the number of people and then making the Earth more... streamlined.
This isn't the Doge theory? Oh, sorry.
One of the world leaders says, you're insane, you're a total raving lunatic. And the Master responds, ah, yes, the bray of the stupid and terrified. And as that's going on, the Damocles base is getting closer to Earth orbit. And we join Marcus.
So you could say... The sword of Damocles is hanging over their heads?
Yes, we could say that.
You could sing it if you know Rocky Horror Picture Show, but anyway.
So Marcus is kind of watching everything that's going on and looking very closely. Down at the bottom, he turns into, you know, like in the movies when they go into the house of the guy and he's got all the pictures hanging up. Yeah, well, he goes from watching everything that's going on and having all the different heroes and battles on the screens to 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 shots of Carol Danvers on screens.
Yeah.
At which point, Daddy Kang comes walking in.
Now, it looks like he's putting, like, did he just come out of his, like, environmental chamber, like Vader? Because he looks like he's putting his helmet back on.
Yeah, that is what it looks like. And I would suspect that is what he's doing, but you know, he doesn't look like threatening. I know he's got a lot, you know, a lot of different things going on and all of that, but he looks like if Thor got him, he would just rip him in half and it would be done.
He looks like if Grimace from McDonald's was cosplaying as Kang, especially yeah.
I don't even know how to respond to that.
Well, you know the picture I'm talking about, with the big face shot with Carol Danvers.
Yeah.
Like picture.
On
like,
on the right of that page, three down.
Yeah, that's all. I just see Grimace. I see Grimace.
Yeah. Then the quartet of Yellow Jacket, Warbird, Silverclaw, and Quicksilver are all mounting an offensive, and we see them coming towards it, towards the reader. I know I've seen it before, but this little flying thing that Yellowjacket is on, First of all, I don't really understand why he needs that, because as Yellowjacket, he can fly.
But not at full size.
Yeah, so?
So why doesn't he just shrink? I don't know.
Doesn't that make like a piece of hardware that he has to have with him that he wouldn't otherwise need? Although he could use pin particles to shrink it and put it like in a pocket in his Yellowjacket suit.
True. And they are greeted in the base by the Joker. Oh, wait, no.
Yeah, we get the Killing Joke ha-ha-has all over the screen.
Yeah.
And he's arranged, the Master has arranged a welcome of Plodix for him.
Plodicy? Plodi?
Plodi.
Plodexes?
When I first read this, I kind of misread when it's down at the bottom. It says, you know, Master says kill intruder, so you Hulk. But I saw where I saw the Hulk, I thought it said Hulk. And I was like, I was trying to figure out what's going on here for a second. Is he like somehow a, you know, using a recreation of the Hulk somehow? But it was just my own misreading.
Yeah, just.
These things are hellaciously fast in water, Quicksilver. I don't know how fast they are on land, but as powerful as they are, I want someone on the outside. So she doesn't want him in the middle. Now,
yeah.
Silverclaw is what kind of beast is she there?
I don't know. It could be a bear. It doesn't look. It's got three talons, unless she's got some spiritual. What the hell is spiritual?
It's from Budweiser.
Combined burial and spiritual beasts. Oh, that's what I was trying to say. I don't remember. It's been a long time since I've read West Coast Avengers.
Mm.
Where I believe she originates.
Well, Quicksilver has her change back to a human form so he could whisk her away from a diving Plodic. Meanwhile, Yellowjacket is enjoying himself going after them, and he actually says, I've been preferring to fight at full size these days, which could bring us back to him writing that thing. But he's saying he prefers to fight at full size. You know, whatever, but he does shrink down because it helps him in this particular moment.
But he could pack more of a punch when he's smaller because he still has like proportional like knockout power.
Yeah, proportionate strength of a man. Remember that on Saturday Night Live? they had the skit and Garrett Morris was Ant-Man. He's about to keep the strength of a man, and I think it's like Hulk and Superman are like, ooh, the strength of a man. Anyway.
Well, something that we may see next issue, somebody doing a crazy split. Yellowjacket's doing that crazy, you know, leg split that we may see somebody do next episode that I was like, wow. Stress testing that costume too. Although not as much as the other person did.
No.
Does. Will do. Did. Done. Whatever.
Did. Done. Doing. Okay, and where are we? I got lost for a second. Okay.
Well, I mean, they're holding their own. They're turning the tide, and the Master's like, bye-bye.
Kaboom. Yeah, he's very resourceful, Warbird. You have stymied my Plodex wolves, but my base is vast, woman, extending in branches and nodules under all of the northern hemisphere. Do you think a small part... Do you think that the small part you and your fellows occupy now can't be sacrificed without a moment's notice? And then we have an explosion.
Wa-wa-wa-crom.
And for long moments, there is no sound for miles but the rolling echo of the blast. So then Photon returns to the area where Cap and Jack of Hearts and Scarlet Witch are with the un-Ironmaned Tony Stark.
You know, I hear he's really smart, the Jack of Hearts. But the Master's the only fool that'll do anything. Yeah, never mind.
So Cap says, we can't wait for... was it? Let me bring that back. She brings back an analysis of the force field. Tony wants to run a test on it, but Cap says, "We can't wait for that, Tony. Our time's running short. Everybody aboard the ship. You'll have to send us the test result once we've reached orbit." So it's once again using him as just a scientist while they're going into battle. He says, "I wish I could come along, Cap. I know, Tony, but right now we need Tony Stark's brains more than Iron Man's strength." So I guess they hit that again. And meanwhile, then Kang strikes a pose and gets a hologram there.
Says, You've reached the Kang Automated Notice Network.
"My base's exterior shields have been tempered with, and phasio-telemetry traces the culprit to this location. Be warned, as I have stated before, that any attack on my base or my person shall be seen as an attempt to circumvent the field of battle. Repercussions will be swift and thorough." And then there's a bang on their ship.
I still can't see how he can wear those boots.
Yeah, really?
That's got to chafe.
Man. Those are good if you're going, you know, like fly fishing.
Yeah. Where are you going to go fly fishing? In space?
I don't know. I've never been in space. So then we have a pretty well-drawn last panel here. I think that one's maybe one of the best ones in the book.
And the Jack last one. Certainly not the one with Cap. Looks like Cap's taking a dump.
Oh, and the one before that?
Two panels back, yeah, above there.
He also looks like he has a little bit of Jigsaw's face.
That, and he looks like from the heavy metal movie, you know.
"Stern, I'm gonna rip you apart." So,
and funny thing, that ship that they fly on when they that looks a lot like the ships that were used in would be used like 20 some odd years later in, I want to say it is in the last one, in the Star Wars Rise of Skywalker, when the ship takes off and Rey's trying to hold it back and then it blows up and they think Chewbacca's on there, but he wasn't on there. Oh, yeah. Boom. It looks a lot like that. It's the First Order troop carrier. If you take away that wing, that's the same, like the drop. The
first, or is it, drop isn't it down. Similar to the one in A New Hope that the Jawas have?
A sandcrawler?
Yeah.
Maybe. Or it could look like World War II landing craft in Normandy.
Yeah, there you go. So we finish up with Cap saying, "The world's counting on us and we have no choice, so we fight and we win. There are no other options." Next,
and we won't
the
know
heart
until
of battle.
Issue 48.
Yeah, next issue we'll have a little bit of an interlude. Anyway.
Yes.
I'm gonna give you a little sneak peek that I liked issue 47 more than Dr. Bill. So.
Yeah, not too much though, right? I don't remember. This is all a blur. I could probably give you a whole different rundown.
I think if I remember right, see, people can actually take this since we're recording out of order. So we'll give them the little thing. I think we disagreed as we went along, and then our ultimate grade was very, very close to each other.
Yeah. We had big sticking points on certain things, but inevitably it all hammered out.
So, I guess we have a slightly abbreviated version of this for number 46. I think having done it twice, that's not so bad. You want to rate it?
Sure. The cover. I don't know how hard we were on the cover last time, but I think I'm going to give it a C.
I am in agreeance. Okay. That's what I was going to give it.
Interior art has a good and it's bad. When the good's good, the bad's not super bad. So I'm going to give it a B- on the art.
I was going to go a C+. So we're not too far off, but that's where I was.
And the story, it's interesting bringing in the master of the world. And we're still bumping around between different groups, although I think we're gonna, but I think we brought this up last time that like it seems like we would see everybody, and then we'd
do an issue or two focusing on a single group more. And I think we're in the everybody, and we're going to iron it out. You know, we're going to space it out soon again.
Mm-hmm.
Like we do next issue. I haven't read ahead to 48, so. So the story, we'll give the story an A. So
I'm slightly lower than you again. I'm going to give the story a B+.
Okay. So overall grade, flat B.
Agreed. So we ended up in the same place.
Yeah.
All right. Yep. So that'll do it for issue 46. 46
duh. Part duh.
So, and, you know, we'll be back. We already know we're going to be back with 47, so we'll see. Right, we'll see in a little while with that one.
We're so good, we've already done it.
Yeah. So, thank you, everybody, for listening, and we'll catch you then. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you so much for listening to our show, and we hope you'll continue to join us each and every week for more good old-fashioned comic book back issue awesomeness. You can contact Back to the Bins to leave feedback, comments, questions, suggestions, and criticisms via email at bins@twotruefreaks.com or by joining the Back to the Bins group on Facebook. Back to the Bins is a proud affiliate of the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Network, which you may find at www.twotruefreaks.com. Two True Freaks is a registered trademark of DiManzo Corp of Milan, Italy. All rights reserved. Please take a moment to stop by the twotruefreaks.com site and check out their many other fine podcasts, won't you? Thanks, and we'll see you next week.